Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. This week, I am here today with a friend of mine, André Camper. He's the chef sommelier of Benoit Restaurant here in New York City. But before we get started, I do want to make just a little bit of announcement. I'm very much looking forward to this Sunday, August 11th, 2013, we're going to be having a Hawaiian barbecue here at Roberto's to benefit Heritage Radio Network. I hope to see you all there. It starts at 4 to 5 p.m. with a little happy hour, and the main event is going to be 5 to 9. There's going to be delicious food from Maysville, Heritage Foods, of course, Roberto's Catering, and lots more. We're going to be providing some drinks from Anfora, Sombra Mezcal, and Astral Tequila, as well as Empire Brewing Company. We're going to be providing some of the drinks. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hope to see you here. I'll be here mixing up some drinks with my good friend Adam Schumann, who's been on the show from Skernick Wines, and hope to see you here. All right, so without further ado, André, welcome to In the Drink. It's good to have you.
Thank you very much. Good morning. It's a pleasure for me to be with you today.
Yes, thank you. Always impressed to have someone come so early in the morning who works in restaurants for a living. So very much appreciate that.
It was a good excuse for me to leave earlier yesterday night. So thank you again.
So André, I want to talk to you a little bit about your experience. You know, I think you have a little bit more experience than some of the people who've been on the show in the past. You've over 20 years in the restaurant industry.
That's correct.
Starting in France, in Toulouse, where you grew up.
Absolutely.
Tell us about some of the early experiences that you had with food and with wine, and what were some of the reasons that you wanted to go into the industry? Because from what I understand, you were the first one in your family to kind of make this jump into the industry, and what made you do it?
Yes, in my family, most of the men were either in the military or gendarme, to be a little more precise. But because I'm coming from a big family on both sides, on my mother and my father's side, I've been always growing up with, you know, family reunions and having home cooking from my grandmother, then my mother, and early on was very sensitive to seasonal produce, what it was on the garden, and it just gave me that idea of going to school and originally to become a chef rather than being just in the front of the house in the restaurant. And then when I started school in Toulouse, I get two great teachers who were passionate about wine and give me that wine or that my first involvement with wine. And
so this was a restaurant hotel sort of school
training. It was a program of 2 years where we do the first year kitchen, pastry, and front of the house.
And how old were you at this time?
16.
You knew that this was I feel like all my friends graduating college were like, I don't know what I want to do. And they're, you know, 21, 22. You knew at 16.
Well, before that, it was actually by fourth grade, maybe the equivalent of fourth grade in France, the CM2. I remember having to do a little writing of what will be my ideas of, you know, growing up. And most of my friends will say fireman or, you know, policeman and so on. But I was like, I want to become a chef and I will prepare some steamed beans and, you know, add some few menus available already. So, yes, early on I was, you know, really interested in food, eating well. When we had this family reunion, I will stay at the table when every kid will try to leave as early as possible to go and run out in the garden. I was just, you know, interested on licking the plates in front of me. So.
And you had, in terms of family members who were great cooks, was there anyone who was really inspirational? Was it a mother, grandmother, your father?
Both my grandmother on my mother's side and my mother, who was able to do, you know, very, like, you know, everyday meal, enjoyable. And then when it was a little more festive, get all this, you know, attention, being in the kitchen at 6 o'clock in the morning to make sure that when everybody's showing up at noon, we get, you know, a big table and a big festive table up to present. And my grandmother also, for all those, you know, go to the garden, pick up the vegetables and then, you know, do the soup, or go to my grandfather's garden and pick up those snails that were farming and just, you know, prepare them. With my father, I was remembering going to the little mountain outside of Carcassonne, picking up the wild asparagus. The season is very short, but it was fun to just, you know, hike for a couple of hours and then get back with this, you know, little treasure for us and make, you know, a good omelette out of it.
Wow, that's an experience that growing up in Queens, I can say I never once had. So your first job in the restaurant in France?
Well, before I get to the school, I wanted to make sure I knew a little bit of what's going on in the restaurant. So just a local pizzeria next to where I was living accept to have me for a trade for a week. And what I mainly did for those, it was peeling potato and washing salad. But was, you know, see how the restaurant was operating. And then at school, I get, you know, very quickly, I really quickly learn how to, you know, get to kitchen, prep stuff, pastry, which is very meticulous. Mm-hmm. You don't mess up with the grams and the proportion. And the front of the house was a little more difficult for me because I was kind of shy when I was little. And one of the good things the teacher was able to show me was it was not necessarily more difficult to approach a table when you're shy than burning and cutting yourself in the kitchen every single day. So the second year I did work, I did get the specialization as a front of the house. And then after that, they were just starting the program of sommellerie. So I was a second year of this program, which was a 1 year, very intense program of learning about wine, from how to make wine to how to taste wine, what are the different region appellation. Of course, being in France, it was mainly focused with France. And I just, you know, start to learn about outside of France when I first took my job in London, where I spent about a year. And, you know, give me this open-minded that there were not only wine in France.
All right, one more question about your school. I'm so fascinated. I wish that I went to a school like this. What do you think was the most valuable lesson that you learned during your time there? What would you tell 16-year-old you? Say, pay more attention to that, because this is the good stuff.
Well, I think it's the contagious passion that the teacher had to present. They were not only taking care of students and make sure they will get a degree, they were sharing their passion, and they will do a lot of those, you know, extra step to make you participate in some tasting outside of the school hours, do some field trip to visit the winery, organize a vendange train where you will spend 3 days in the winery looking at, you know, what's going on from the grapes who are getting cut to starting the fermentation. So all that was just like, okay, giving you more ideas on what that business is all about. And you know, the wine is really a message from a farmer who's taking care of the land and the grapes for years. And every year is presenting you his new baby with a new vintage.
And why do you think that you were drawn to wine as opposed to maybe going the route of being a general manager or What was it about the wine? Was it that connection to the land and your experiences with maybe with your father and harvesting the asparagus and how exciting that was? Are you a man of the earth? My question.
I've been living in New York for 16 years now, but I am I'm happy when I'm outside, and I like that connection where. Okay, Mother Nature gave us many things. Mm-hmm. We should just, not only take advantage of it, but preserve it and pass it on. So,
okay. So your first job in London, you take this move from France to London. And what do you think is the difference between the way French sommeliers come up and the experience in London and here in New York? How do you think that everyone kind of approaches that job differently?
For me, it was like a big step, a big jump, because I was not necessarily too interested at school on learning foreign language, Spanish or English. And after graduating, I worked in a restaurant for a year. So I was starting to get a little comfortable on how to approach the customer, build my wine list, organize a wine cellar, and then sell the wine to the guests, approaching the table with the trolley of digestif and having them a little Armagnac and so. Once I get to London, it was like a big shock. For the first month, I couldn't even approach the table. I didn't even understand what the customer will ask. So it was like a big cultural shock. Now, what will be the difference for me from my experience going to London and coming to the US? I would say the British accent was actually a little more difficult to get familiar with. They will have big, at the time I was there, they were big knowledge into some specific area. So France, yes, was a big part. Then it was mainly New Zealand. When I came into the US, I thought the variety was much more general. Mm-hmm. Of course, from the US wine that I learned how to discover, but also from South America, from Eastern Europe, from a little more, which is maybe what I like the most in New York, is to be exposed to every part of the world.
And then what brought you to New York?
Good coincidence, I would say. I was in Aise Village between Nice and Monaco. And the owner, when I did the first season, sold his chateau to an American couple from Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And this American couple were interested in keeping the chef, the pastry chef, the maître d' and the sommelier, to have a flow with taking over. But they also wanted me to come to the US and see how a French restaurant in Rye, New York, were welcoming American guests in a French restaurant. So I had a better way or a better experience to welcome the American who will travel to France and be a little more welcoming when they get there. So I get my first introduction in the US there. I did my second season, and at the end of the season, I was like, okay, I need to choose. And the opportunity to come back to New York was a little stronger, so here I am.
Is that where you met Alain Ducasse, who you work with currently?
Actually, just before I left to come to the US, I was in Aise Village, and I had my apartment in Nice, and I knew the chef sommelier at the weekends in Monaco. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, look, I'm done with my work in end of October. I'm moving in New York in December, and I have that November month free. Is it possible to do a training at the weekends and to visit the cellar as well? And he said, sure, no problem. We can have you for 2 weeks. And for those 2 weeks, I was training with Gérard Marjon, who's now the wine director of the entire group of Alain Ducasse. And those 2 weeks training was intense and with him on the floor every day. And when I heard that Alain Ducasse was opening in 2000 at the Essex House, I contacted Gérard Marjon. Apparently, I left with some good memories, because He remembered me when I called him. We met in Paris just briefly, and I took the position to do the opening at the Essex House.
Wow. All right. I want to hear a little bit more about the Essex House opening. And of course, we're going to talk about all the great things that you're doing at Benoit. But we're going to do that right after a short break. We'll be right back.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
We're back on In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And it's me, Joe Cabanelli, here with Andre Compere, the chef sommelier of Benoit here in New York City. Before we get to his experience at Benoit, I definitely want to ask about the opening of the Essex House with Alain Ducasse, a classic restaurant, certainly one of the greatest restaurants in New York of its time. I say that being someone who had actually never been, but it was sort of always one of those places where it's like, one day when I can afford to go to this place, I will go. But tell us a little bit about the opening of the Essex House and your time with Alain Ducasse there.
Well, I've been with Alain Ducasse for almost 9 and some change years. And the challenge of the Essex House was amazing for many reasons. It was the first restaurant Alain Ducasse opened in the US, and he was putting the standard as high as is done in places like Monte Carlo, the Louis XV, and the Plaza Athénée in Paris, where in both places he reached the maximum reward of 3 Michelin star.
And that was a big deal at the time. I think no one had opened up a second 3 Michelin star restaurant, especially one that was far away from the other one. And everyone was like, how is this possible that the quality can be the same?
And that's one of the things of Alain Ducasse being a pioneer on many ways and showing that, you know, everything is possible. He did the same with the Essex House. It was, you know, a little surprising for the New York scene to have a restaurant where you will have fine dining on dinner only. You have your table for the night. You're not, you know, turning tables. It's the same experience that you will have in the 3 Michelin star in Paris or in Europe. So it was, you know, sometimes welcome, sometimes not as welcome. But we work really hard, and through the years we won the respect from the guests who were coming back. Most of the guests will say, "You're serving us a trip to Paris," and we mm-hmm. enjoy that very much. We did have a lot of fun, a lot of hard work too, but that come with it.
Yeah, there's such a difference between the New York dining scene, even fine dining in a lot of places in New York, and certainly fine dining in Paris. But even I feel like a more casual place, if you are not in a main city in Paris, in France, or in Italy, in a nice restaurant that isn't maybe a super fine restaurant, the table is yours for the night. There's no second seating. There's no, all right, if you show up a half hour late, we need that table back. You know, there's none of that.
We kick you out, or you will put you on your lunch to get your coffee. No, that was not...
That's not the case. So how was your experience from going from super high-end, one of the few three Michelin star restaurants in the world, and you'd worked at other very, very fine dining Michelin star restaurants, to kind of going back to something a little bit more casual, like your time at Le Halle or Benoit? Which do you prefer, and how are you able to grab some of your experiences from the fine dining and utilize them in your service in a more casual place?
Well, I think it comes with the age. As I'm getting older, I like to have fun. And I think being in a casual ambiance like at Benoit allowed me to have fun, to be a little more decontracted, and to still have the same performance without being stiff or pretentious. To approach the guest and make sure that I pass that message, and the guest is having fun as well.
Yeah, and it seems like you're having a lot of fun at Benoit. I get your newsletter. It's all the things that Andre's pouring this week. You have the Napa systems.
Is that the Napa technology system allowing me to pour by the ounce some prestige bottles that you will never do otherwise, which is, you know, very, it was like, okay, is that going to be interesting enough for the guest or not? Well, in fact, it is. And it is a great opportunity to open some very rare bottles that you will never do. And offering an IKEM by the ounce, because an ounce of IKEM is just enough for a taste and having, you know, a memorable evening and moment after your dessert or as of your dessert, without, you know, taking a loan and breaking the bank.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe an ounce of IKEM, but can you really enjoy or understand a Burgundy, let's say a red Burgundy that you're pouring, with having just 1 ounce of it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes. And I mean, an ounce is 3 centiliters. So most of the restaurant will pour a 5 ounce glass. It's a fifth of a glass. So it's actually a little more like, you know, a little more like just a sip. When you're doing a professional tasting, most of the time they pour you a little less than an ounce. Mm-hmm. And you're still able to taste and, you know, find out if you like it and will purchase it or not.
So. Absolutely. So what have been some of the more exciting wines? How do you choose these wines that go into the system?
Well, a little bit seasonally. It doesn't necessarily make sense to have a big, powerful wine when it's summer and you are speaking of you know, asparagus or something light. But there were, for me, some unapproachable wines, such as Petrus, that I wanted to give an opportunity to Mr. Everybody. So I did finish my last bottle of Petrus about a few weeks ago. I'm looking for some new vintage maybe to put on, but that was really well received. For the past year and a half now that I have this program, everybody was so enthusiastic of, okay, you know, I have always heard about Petrus, I have never get a chance to taste it. And spending $48 for an ounce was like, beyond the experience, it was like, you know, being like a kid in a candy store. It was like, wow, thank you.
So do these wines evolve at all? Is the first sip any different from the very last?
I'm planning on doing a little more serious tasting with just professional, and have a blind tasting of a bottle. The preserving system allowed me to keep the bottle fresh for 60 days. I've done the experience with Mr. Gigal when he came in town, because I have this London 88 vintage by the ounce. And he came for lunch with a journalist. And I said, well, I know it's lunch, I know it's business, but you can have a taste of 1 ounce. And he said, well, sure, especially on the 88 vintage, I like to have a taste. And the journalist was, okay, but how long that bottle has been open? I said, oh, only 30 days. So she looked at me a little scared. And I said, what I'd like to do is I'll give you an ounce of this wine that has been opened for 30 days and I'll open a fresh bottle. This way you can have an ounce of, you know, something just coming up from the cellar. And Philippe Guigal was like, you know, I'm amazed because you will not have told me those bottles were open in so many different times there. I will never guess. I think the bottle open in the preserving system showed a little more open, maybe nose, but you know, it was very yes. like.
Tiny. And at that point, it could be a bottle variation difference. Maybe if you open them up together at the same time,
absolutely,
the other one would have been more absolutely. Open. And you don't know. Oh, that. Well, that. I mean, that's really exciting. I look at your list, and certainly from your newsletter, and like, oh, I do really want to try that. Oh, I really want to try that. And some of these wines, you know, I'm not going out and spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars on bottles when I go out to eat.
Yeah,
so, so being able to have a taste is super exciting, and I think that it is really emblematic of your personality as well, which is that, you know, that wine is something to be shared, and that it's something that is joyful and it should be very happy. And I was asking you earlier because I had read that you have some of the wines from Alain Ducasse's private cellar. And I want you to share this as well for the listeners. But I was asking you, like, you know, if they're from his private cellar, do you ever come across the case where Elaine would say, oh, this wine right here, only if they're a real wine enthusiast, they really get it, or only if I really like someone, can you sell that wine? Or tell me what your thought process is on some of those.
Well, at some point many years ago, I will have that attitude, but I think as Alain Ducasse himself told me a couple of times, André, you get Americanized. I don't think I am holding anything. It's sometimes I will highly suggest that this 89 vintage is a little tight and you should consider the 88. Now, you still want the 89, I have no issue. I will give you this 89. I will open the bottle and I will, you know, make sure it shows as best as it can. So if I need to decant it or double decant it, I will do what needs to be done. But yes, I'm very happy with the treasure that I have in the cellar. Those bottles came in the US 10 years ago. Most of them, I did order them and receive the container when they showed up. So they are a little bit my little babies. Mm-hmm. But being able to bought them 10 years ago, have always known how those bottles have been kept. I know they are just pristine condition. So I'm happy to share them with a guest. And because it's Benoit, because it's a bistro, I'm not doing like crazy markup. And for most of those bottles, you will find on the list will be pretty much the price I will pay them if I could find them in an auction or anywhere in the market.
Some great values on this list. I want to commend you for that. Some really, really excellent values. Also wanted to ask you about the list. Your list highlights which wines you have that are organic. And you should almost highlight which ones aren't organic because almost every single wine on your list is made through organic processes. Why do you feel like that's something that is important for you to focus on?
It's when you get the choice, and being in New York, we have so many options. You can pick something that is not good or something that is good and pretty much at the same price point. So if I do have the choice, I like to highlight the people who are just, again, respecting Mother Nature and give them a little bit credit for it.
Yes, I agree. And I mean, you think of Alain Ducasse and French food, and I think for a lot of people, maybe what comes to mind is something that is very fancy, but you have the joy of the bistro, the high-energy bistro, very, very nice, welcoming, high quality people such as yourself, and a wine list that is really exciting to look at. You guys are doing really, really fun things. I did want to ask you, so you grew up in France, obviously, worked in many French restaurants. There are a few wines on the list that are outside of France, but where do you think Where are your most interesting regions outside of France? Where do you drink if you're not drinking French wine?
Well, there is maybe one of my favorite wine outside of France will be, especially in the summertime, an Assyrtiko from Santorini. I came across the bottle of Sigalas when I first visit Greece, and I was not even in Santorini. I was in the little island of Naxos. And when I asked the liquor store, okay, what should I drink? What is the most beautiful bottle of white that I could enjoy? He pointed this out, and I fall in love. I am also very interested on a small new region that we don't really talk about yet, such as Slovenia. And I think there is many great producers doing a lot of very good wines in Slovenia that just need a little more exposure.
Absolutely. I think that's the tricky thing with a lot of those Eastern European countries that have some really interesting producers is the representation. Sometimes they need to have some better, whether it's a more professional distributor or just working more to have better representation in the country or a sommelier like yourself to show them on the list to get the word out there. But I agree. Slovenia has some very, very interesting wines. So that's it. Anyway, I guess we have to finish up now. But André Compère, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm going to encourage everyone, please go check out Benoit for some such a cool wine list. I was antisocial looking at this list. We got here a little bit early, and I just stuck my nose in it. And every time I look at that André's selections, you're doing just such cool things.
Yes, and to maybe give you an extra motivation to come and see us, anybody who's following the show and hearing us in the air, when you come to the restaurant and give the code of Heritage Radio, we'll be very happy to give you a selection of five orders, either at the bar with a glass of wine or into the dining room at the restaurant. It would be a pleasure to welcome you.
Is there a time limit based on this?
We'll offer that through Labor Day weekend 2013.
Okay, through Labor Day weekend. So yes, please go to Benoit and give the passcode Heritage Radio through Labor Day 2013, and they're going to hook you up over there. Thank you for doing that. That's very generous.
It's a pleasure. We love to have you.
All right. And thanks to all of you for listening. This has been In the Drink on Heritage Radio network.org, and hope to see you at the Hawaiian Barbecue on Sunday. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.